Now you all have copies of our talk from Sunday. And we have done the first side here, I know. And second side begins with I practice. Oh, they're still handing them out. That's good. So that's great. I practice. I train myself to live now with no past or future. I train myself to live now with no past or future. I train myself to live now with no past or future. Do you have the ability to train yourself to live now without a past or a future? Do you have the ability to forget the unhappinesses that were in your heart when somebody did you wrong? They say about a woman who was raped or something like that, that that's so terrible, and they want to go and get the person who did it, and they want to do this and they want to do that, and she should go to recall that, and she should do this and she should do that. And unfortunately, that they do that. Now, it shouldn't happen. Okay? No one should be forced against their will to do anything. It shouldn't happen. But when it does happen, let it go. Because as long as you hold on to it, it immobilizes you from being the beautiful being that you are. And we do not want to be immobilized from being the beautiful being who we are. And we will be every time we dwell on the past. Every time we dwell on the future. So, my priorities, and now, did you get that? My priorities? What are my priorities? Private. My priorities are private. They're nobody's business. The minute you start telling somebody your dreams and your priorities, they will come up with all sorts of reasons why it can't be done. They'll come up with all sorts of reasons like, you think you're good enough to do that? Or you think that you got the intelligence to do that? My God. Or maybe they don't even say it out loud. They just sneer under their breath. You, boy, oh boy, your mother sure raised a dummy. And of course then you turn out to be Einstein and they say, oh, I knew her when. Everybody rides on a boat that's afloat. Now what we want to do, we want to have our priorities be secret in us. Now we spoke about the movie The Secret that you'd seen. And what was the secret? The secret was that the stem cells are there, but they didn't say that because they didn't have that information at that moment. Now, the secret was the law of cause and effect. And they didn't even get that right. They got the law of attraction. Because the law of cause and effect has been around so long, and they felt it wasn't as attractive as the law of attraction. Now, did you know that you are a magnet? That you attract to yourself all sorts of things? You are not. You are not in the magnet. You are not a magnet. If you are a magnet, you're not worth much. If you're a magnet, you're going to bring to yourself all the nails and all the things that are made out of steel and stuff like that. And that's not what you want to do. We are working with a magical clue, a magical clause here, which says all already exists. Now, if all already exists, that means that that new house that you would like to have already exists. That new house that you would like to live in, it already exists. That new relationship you'd like to have, it already exists. You don't have to go looking in bars to find people to fall in love with. You know? You don't have to go looking around at the tennis court or in church. My goodness, don't ever look for somebody in church. Because if you find somebody in church, they're searching just as much as you are. You know? It's not bad. It's not bad. But unfortunately, I'm going to make the next comment. If you found it, you don't go to church. Is that right? If you found it, if you found your spiritual path so beautifully, so perfectly, you wouldn't go to church. You know what you'd do? You would go up on the mountain and have a place like I do and walk around the campus every day saying, I like me, I like me. And nobody can complain. And most days when it's warm, I would be very much at home here in Jamaica, but I probably wouldn't be at home here in Jamaica because you probably wouldn't approve of it. But up on my ranch, I'm all by myself, and I walk naked around my ranch all in the mornings and the nights and all the time. And I'm just so happy. I like me, I'm God, and all that sort of stuff. And the rattlers, they just say, hey, cool boy, we shed our skin now and then too. Although I must confess, the border patrol come on our property because we're a mile from the Mexican border, and we have a lot of Mexican international travelers coming through. And one day, there was a whole bunch of travelers that were being herded by the border patrol, and my big dog runs over and, hi, you guys, nice to see you. Come on, you're welcome here. And I had to walk over there and take my dog by the leash and take him away. And they must have thought, gee, this is an interesting place. But be yourself and have fun. Now, what is your priority? Is your priority to wear beautiful gowns or beautiful suits? I said to a man in the Court Lay Hotel, where I'm staying, and he was in the elevator coming down, and I was going down to get ready for breakfast, and this big, tall fellow, just, you know, solidly built, and he was wearing this black suit, and he just looked so, you know, imposing. And I said, where are you going to be all dressed up like that? It must be very important. He says, I hope it is. Now, you see, his beautiful clothes would not sell the people on what he has in mind. It has to be his attitude. And I was in the restaurant, and I saw many different people there, and some were wearing suits and ties, and some were wearing other casual and other things. And when those who liked themselves, they just sort of radiated outwardly, and I didn't notice what they were wearing. We were sitting having tea in the lobby, and there was a woman sitting there, and she had a couple of telephones laying on there, one's for America, one's for the Brazil, where she came from, Peru or Brazil, and another for here. And she had all these telephones so she could make local calls, you know, whenever she's there, because she travels a lot. And she was working on her computer and just having a good old time. And we were having a conversation, and she thought she was included. You know? She kept looking up at us and talking and entering our conversation, and she thought she was included in our conversation. Well, we did include her, but we have no idea who she is and what she does. And this is a personality. When you think that you're in everybody's world, when you think that everybody wants to talk to you, everybody wants to have you in their world, this is a happy, happy, happy time for yourself. You see, I choose my values and live them quietly but effectively. Do you choose your values and live them quietly and effectively? That's a very important thing to do. Because when you choose your values and live them quietly and effectively, then everything is in divine order. I told you, I was walking with these group of people, and they started swearing, and one guy said, you know, Herb's a minister. And the other guy said, oh, excuse me, Herb. And I said, well, don't excuse yourself to me. You know, if you're going to swear, and that's going to be your attitude, I'm not interested at all. But if you speak well and do things, I will listen to you. If you swear, I won't hear a word you say. That's not in my vocabulary. That's not in my world. That's not who I am and what I am. I'm not a prude about swearing. I'll say damn or hell or something now and then too. But the thing is, that's not my vocabulary. My mother said, remember what did my mother say? If you have to swear, you have a poor vocabulary. Remember the little boy? Came in the house all swearing, and his mother said, now what is this all about? You know, your real friends will think you have a poor vocabulary. Now, what is our vocabulary? What is your priority? What is it that you are going toward in your life? Okay, you thought I was being very facetious and being very silly and being very outrageous even by saying that don't look for lovers in church because they're searching too. And anyone who really finds the path is not in church because they don't care. They're doing their own thing. And they're walking their own path. And you know what a person who's really found their direction is going to do? If you find your direction of being a musician, what are you going to do? Take lessons and learn how to play. If you find your direction, and your direction is you love to swim, you're going to do everything you can to be in the swim. You know? We're going to do everything we can to be in what we love. Now, if we find our spiritual path, and if we know what it is, and follow it, we are not going to ask anyone to be with us. Now, I am not against marriage, but I am absolutely against marriage. I think that when a man and a woman find each other and delight in each other's company, I think that's wonderful. I think if they get married and have children, that's wonderful. But the minute she says, you do what I tell you, you can't go out tonight, you can't do this, you got to tell me where you're going, it's over. The minute he says to her, what kind of woman are you? You're going out with the girls? I doubt that, you know. Dump them. Dump him. If you can't be yourself absolutely in your relationship, you don't have a marriage. All you have is ball and chain. And that's no good. That's no good. Now, when I prepare young people, and they can sometimes be in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, when I prepare young people for marriage, they come in and they talk with me. And I'm not so much in counseling, but they come and talk to me. And I say, who are you? What do you want to find out of your relationship? Can he be the same person after he gets married that he was before he got married? Can he just feel like, hey, I'm going to go buy a motorcycle? Does he have to tell you about it? I mean, you, when you feel, hey, I'm going to go and take a trip. Now, a wife, if she said to her husband, sweetheart, see you, and I'll be back, and she takes off and is gone for 6 months, and then comes home, and her husband can say, well, glad to see you back, I sure love you, and they go on with their relationship just like nothing changed, and or he does or she does, they go away, and whoever is left takes care of the children, takes care of the house, takes care of all the details. Now, you know, that is the perfect marriage. That is the perfect marriage. Because in that marriage, they absolutely trust each other. They absolutely trust each other. It wouldn't be like that woman who said, I don't want sex anymore in marriage, you know. That was an unfair thing. But the thing is, if they really love each other, they know that whatever each was doing while they were apart was something beautiful, noble, fantastic, fulfilling for them in every beautiful way. I think we've got some responses going on back there. But really, this is absolute truth. I've been studying psychology and psychiatry and all these things for so many years and working in mental hospitals and working with people who have problems. And the problem of people in mental institutions is one simple thing. They don't like themselves. They don't like themselves. Because every person who really liked themselves didn't try to prove anything to anybody else. And you see, when you say, I look at my body and see it now as the new now illusion I choose, is that right? Do you look at your body as the new now illusion that you choose? Are you happy with your body? Are you happy with your physique, with your musculature? Are you happy with your brain? Are you happy with your eyes? You may wear glasses so thick, and that doesn't bother you. You say, I'm happy to be able to see. And then you start saying to yourself, I have perfect eyes. I have perfect eyes. I have perfect eyes. Night and day, I have perfect eyes. And you sing it and you think it and you, pardon me, and you have it go through your heart all the time. I can't sing as well as the young prince here, but I do my best. I listen to him and then I sort of tune in on the melody and the words, and but he always comes through first best. So, night and day, say to yourself, I have perfect eyes, I have perfect eyes, I have perfect eyes. It's the new now illusion that you choose. As I said, they can be so thick. And do you think that in the minds of people who have so thick glasses is not some magical stuff going on? Do you think that people, just because they wear glasses at all, or don't wear glasses, or do whatever, that they don't have something special? Glasses are merely an indication that you don't really like yourself. And when you... No, no, really. When you like yourself, don't hide them. When you like yourself, they are not necessary. What... All right, now, Emma, tell me what in... When we were kids, what did they call glasses besides four eyes? What did they call them? Cheaters. Remember? Let me get my cheaters so that I can read. Not here?
No.
Well, that's good. But that's good. But I am saying to you, not in any way to belittle the glasses. I mean, we are very happy that we have them. I am just saying to you one thing. You have the ability to bring everything into perfect divine order within you. If you are a person who is over 2 years old or something like that, and you have arthritis in your hands and so forth, and they don't want to operate right, and you tell everybody you have arthritis in your hands, and you act like you have arthritis in your hands, and you can't pick up things, you know, you're going to have it. You're going to have it. But now, I'm going to give you a little... I give my brain an energy massage and observe how it tingles with vibrations of an energy I had not noticed before. I give my brain an energy massage and observe how it tingles with vibrations and energy I had not noticed before. Now, an energy massage is where you do not touch your skin. You can, but you just sort of tickle the hairs. And just put your hand along your skin like this here, and do it along like this. It's better if you could do it over your naked body, but take it how you find it. And you do this here, and you just go over your body and go over here. Now, your hands are a powerhouse of energy. Right?
That's right.
Who was telling you that? Huh? Rhonda? Rhonda Joyce? Rhonda? Did you put your hand on that energy register?
Yes.
Where were we? What building were we in?
The Institute of Jamaica.
And what did you do? You put your hands on. Yeah. I mean, she forced us all to put our hands on there. So, no, she put her hands on it. And what did it register?
Seven.
And what did mine register?
Eight.
And what did yours register?
8.5.
Oh, she left. Yeah. Yeah. And you were there too? No. Anyhow.
I've been there.
You've been there. Okay. Now, what does that mean? That means you have energy coming out of your hands. And some people have much more than others. I was at the United... UCLA, which is the Los Angeles University of California offices in Los Angeles, and Dr. Thelma Moss was doing research on Carillion photography. And Carillion photography is where you take a picture of something and it photographs your energy patterns. Quite good. I had mine done and it was like this here. And it's kind of nice. And so we have this tremendous energy. And our body itself radiates energy. When you photograph it with the Carillion photography, you see just aura all around you. You've heard of auras, you know, the aura all around you. This is vibrant energy. And it comes in many colors, too. And the colors have meanings. Some of the colors that are rather darkish mean illness, and some of the colors that are bright and cheery mean vitality and life and energy and health. Now, this is what you're dealing with, but you're doing it for yourself. You're taking your hand and you're moving it across your body, and you're moving it all around your body, over every area of your body. And while you're doing it, what do you say? I like me, 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 I like me. Now, we're at this point here in your notes. I give my brain an energy massage. Now, here's how I give my brain an energy massage. I like me, 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 I like me. Try it. I like me, 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 I like me. And you will feel, as you hold your hand over your head, some people feel warmth and some people feel cool, but you'll feel a cold breeze coming right out of the top of your head. And it is really something spectacular. And when you do this, you just will brighten up and you just be alive. I went to speak at the University of California at Fullerton, Cal State Fullerton, and we were having an alternative states of consciousness conference there. And in the conference, a number of people that I'd been dealing with for many years, that we were close friends, they knew I was coming, and they saved a seat next to them. Although I was a speaker, I still sat in the audience because there were a lot of speakers. And so I was away. I was bringing my mother to the conference. She wanted to see what was going on. And so we came, maybe about two or three blocks away. And my friends said, I knew where you were. You were two or three blocks away. I could feel your vibrations. I could feel your aura. And the closer you got, it was bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Until I walked into this room, and they were supposed to have Dr. Shafia Karagula, who is a master psychiatrist and worked in these areas. She was supposed to be the first speaker. Well, she was delayed. And so they turned to me and asked me if I would take the rostrum and be the first speaker. They knew by the energies and by the vibrations that were coming, that it was going to be me. And I always know I'm number one. But it was fantastic. It was really fantastic. And my mother said, Herbie, how do they know this? How come they gave you the first place? You know, I mean, that's the title role, the opening speech for the conference and everything else. And you're going to talk about spirit. What? Mind treatment? Spiritual mind treatment? And it was great. I did the same thing when I went up to Russia at the University of Moscow and Leningrad, each in different cities. And my talks were always the spiritual mind treatment. I wrote a special program on the spiritual mind treatment, a little document on it, and gave it out to everyone there. And it went great. Because I was just a bubble of energy. And I didn't care about anything. I didn't care about what all the other guys were doing, and they were doing great things. I didn't care what they were saying or how they were saying, but each would have their own little area that they were talking about and working on. But your energy is so fantastic. And when you can give yourself an energy massage every night, give yourself an energy massage as you go to bed every night, and just say, I like me, I like me, I like me. And when you lay down to sleep, you'll zonk right out. And you'll sleep only a reasonable amount in the night, and you'll wake up in the morning so refreshed and so fulfilled and so fantastic, because you are using the energy that you do have in a perfect way. Now, who spearheads the activity of that energy? Who spearheads the energy of that activity? Who? Ourselves. Yeah. We spearhead it. And that's what it is. I look at our time schedule here. Okay. Who spearheads it? We do it. Now, who is it? What is happening? The stem cells are that energy. The stem cells are that vibrant energy that is unlimited. It's an energy that cannot be controlled. It's an energy that just flows. Now, science hasn't got this statement yet, but they'll have it soon. When the energy of your body is not being used, it's just fluffed off. It's like your aura. It's like the energy that comes out of your hands and flowing around and doing beautiful things. That's what it works. We have that at our disposal. Why not keep it and make it work beautiful? Can you do that?
Yes.
Keep it and make it work beautiful on your behalf. Because when you do, wow, magic takes place. You see, there's so many times, all right, you know what a thermos bottle is. A thermos bottle keeps a fluid warm. You put coffee in a thermos bottle and it keeps it warm. You can go on a long trip and drink it all through the trip and it's all nice and warm. But you can't, I guess you could take a long trip on the island here too, because it takes a long time to make a short trip. Your roads go around all these hills and all these vales. I looked at the overview of your wonderful island here at the museum, and it was quite an interesting thing. Very beautifully. That's one of the more positive things that I've seen. Lovely. Okay, now, all illness and circumstances and bodily form are the result of my thought. I do not concern myself with what is, rather what I choose to experience. Now, what do you choose to experience? Do you choose to experience wholeness, happiness, peace, harmony, right action, truth, love, honor, and obey? Do you choose to have that? Or what do you choose? What do you choose? Now, you are, let's say, a mother. And as a mother, you have a child. And you look at this child and you say, what a wonderful child. And you say, I have a beautiful child and my child's a genius. You say, I have a wonderful child and my child's a genius. Why do you say that? Come. Because you are. Because you're a genius. And you're saying to your kid, you're a genius. The little kid is, you too. Yo. Pointing fingers here, yo. Yeah, we, each one of us. I mean, I have a kid. He's 53 years old. Just, and I'm 25, you know. But he's just fantastic. Now, all of his life, his mother had a few problems, was in the hospital quite often, but all of his life, he had to be alone many times. And so I taught him, I said, Mark, learn to like yourself and to be alone with yourself and have a good time by yourself. Not playing with yourself, not doing nonsense things, but liking yourself and doing fun things. And I worked with him. It didn't happen all at once, but I worked with him. And in no time at all, he found projects that he delighted in. And he was a very friendly guy. He had a lot of friends. And his friends wanted to come over to the house when just he was alone there. And I said, that's okay. But remember, you're in charge. Anything your friends do in the house while I'm not there, or while you've invited, you're in charge. You're responsible. So they were shooting their bow and arrows downstairs, and an arrow went right through the carport sliding glass, fiberglass window. And I came home, and I saw it there, and I thought, So I called Mark and his friend, and I said, "Now, who did this?" "Tommy did." I said, "No, Mark, you did this. This is your home. And anything that happens in your home, you're responsible for. If you invite a guest in here, they are you. If you haven't told them what the rules are. Now, Mark, that has to be repaired." And he says, "Okay." And he says, "Give me the credit card to go down." No. "You go down to the hardware store and you buy the replacement yourself and you bring it home and put..." "But Dad, you buy it yourself." And so he went down to the store with his friend and he picked it up and brought it home and put it in. But you see, I said, "Mark, you're a genius. You know better than to let your friends handle something they can't handle. You know better than to let your friends do something that's going to make trouble for them. Do you think that Tommy was happy having shot an arrow through the fiberglass screen? He was, oh, his dad would shoot him, you know? But he was not going to let that happen. He did it at your house." And so you have to be very careful. And I told him, I said, "Mark, you're a genius. You're a genius. You're a genius." And he didn't like school. And even through high school, he just sort of wheedled along. But before he got to high school, he had a teacher in the elementary school, later elementary, junior high, who took all of his class up for an airplane ride. He was a former World War II pilot. And he took all the kids up for a flight in a plane. And they loved it. And Mark came home and said, "Dad, I want to be a pilot. I want to fly. I want to fly. That's what I want." I said, "Mark, are you sure?" "Oh, yes, yes, yes." So we both went to the airport and took lessons, and he became an exquisite pilot. Exquisite. He wasn't old enough to have a license, so he had to fly by himself over the world. You know? He wasn't old enough to have a license, but he could fly solo wherever he wanted to go. Now, I think that's a very charming attitude. But he flew well. He flew well. And then, as he was going along, he didn't have a lot of money. And he wanted to have an airplane. I bought him an airplane. And I said, "But you got to put the gas in it. I'll pay for the tie down at the airport and all the good things." And so then I bought another airplane for me so that I would fly one and he'd fly and we'd fly together and just have a lot of fun. Well, he didn't have any money. He didn't have any money. Just from he was a busboy at Coco's restaurant. And busboys don't earn all that much money, and besides which he was going to school. So he had his friends, once he got his license, he had his friends pay for the gas, and so he flew them up and they all had a good time together. But then, at the same time, he bought himself a Volkswagen. And of course it was always fully paid for, it didn't loan money for anybody, borrow. And then he bought a Chrysler, a beautiful Chrysler car. And then he bought a Cadillac, a great big Cadillac. Now these are older cars, but they ran just fine. Here he is, a high school kid with no real job, just a job enough to pay for his expenses, and he owned one airplane I gave him, and then he had the other airplane that I used. He could use that anytime he wanted to. Plus, he had three cars. Plus, he was an exquisite driver. Plus, he did everything perfectly. Today, he builds ultralight airplanes and sells them all over the world and flies them over there and takes them around. An ultralight airplane is an airplane you can virtually pick up with your hands. It's so light. And it can seat two people and so forth. But he just followed his dream. He found out he wanted to fly, and I took him to fly, and he flew, and he became wonderful in it, just wonderful. But he followed his dream. Now, you see, you have dreams too. And how many times did you walk away from your dream? How many times did you let somebody knock your priorities right in the shins, you know? And how many times are you letting yourself do it right now? I could look at each one of you here in this room, and I could make you lie by just one simple little statement. And you'd be a terrible liar, liar, pants on fire, you know? You'd just be terrible. I would say, ma'am, you are beautiful. Oh, me? Oh, no. Oh, no. Or would you say, thank you, is this true? You're beautiful. Yeah? You're a handsome man. Yeah? 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 And you? You are filled with magic. Yeah? And so, but you see, I have to push you. It is not something we normally do. I'd like you, having you say, I am God, God I am, that's not something we normally do. In our retreat tonight that you had for the healing service, throughout the healing service, you're always saying, God outside of me, God outside of me, God outside. And that's a shame, because it's God inside. Now, it's okay, like I told you, God outside is okay, because God's everywhere, but Sir John? I want you to get me a Coke. So John says, yes, sir. John goes down to the airport, gets on an airliner, flies over to London, flies over to China, gets a Coke in China, and then flies back down here and gives it to me. Now, interesting, huh? Now, if John really liked himself, he'd say, hey, we got some in the fridge here. Or I'll go to the local store and pick one up. But I said, get me a Coke. And what did he do? He said, hey, last time I saw Coke was in China when I was in this company there and doing various things, right? You know, and now, is he going to say yes or no to me? He's going to say, Herb, you're making fun of me. I'm not making fun of you. I am saying, in your mind's eye, you took that trip. In your mind's eye, when I had him get on that airplane, he got on, I didn't even tell him what flight airlines. And where's the first stop on the airplane? China. He got on the airplane, flew direct to China. Or the other way around. You know? Interesting. But you see, you do more things than you know. And your mind is so open and so free. I can tell you stories and you will fly with those stories and you'll dream of those stories. I keep going back to stories that I've told you, but with Elmer Green and his daughter and the three spots on her hand where he told her to make it each a different temperature. And he says, now, you can make each spot on your hand a different temperature. You can certainly tell your headache or your cold that it's gone. And you can tell your cold that it's gone. You can tell your cold that it's gone. You can tell the cold that it's gone. Don't name it as yours. The cold. You know, one of the reasons that the German marriages are so tough, too, my man, they say. And, of course, that's come around the world, too. My man, or my woman, you know. And my woman, beat her up, you know, my man, you know. He's got to go and take care of everything for me. Now, we don't want to do that. We want to be so beautiful, so loving, so gentle. How many of you, and please don't raise your hands, how many of you are married? I said, don't raise your hands. Didn't you hear me? Shame on you. I said, don't raise your hand, because it doesn't matter. How many of you are married? Now, all of you who are married or having a relationship or anything else, you can be in paradise right now by saying, I have the most perfect fellow in the world who is my friend. And we enjoy each other, we love each other, we do whatever we choose to do in our friendship, we just have the greatest, greatest time together, and it is wonderful. And that person, whoever it'll be, will look at you when you come back to your relationship from this meeting here, and they'll look at you and they'll say, there's something different about you. You got some sort of a mischievous little happy smile about you, you know? Well, what have you been doing? Well, I was just thinking about our relationship. What? Yes. And I was thinking, I'm in paradise because I am magnificent and I chose the most magnificent person to share myself with. Now, you see, This is what we do. Now, each one of you can say to your stem cells, I like you. I like you, stem cells. I like you, stem cells. I like you. Because, you see, scientifically they're proving that these stem cells slide into whatever slot they are required to be. And these stem cells can go right on down to your heart attack. They can go right on down to your liver or your gallbladder or any other area of your body where it has a need. And they do. Because it's open. It's open. It just flows however it flows. And it can go, if your house needs to be fixed, you say, I now have a perfect house. I now have a perfect house. My house is in perfect divine order. I have my windows are all opening and closing perfectly. Everything is perfect, you know? And lo and behold, it is done. And you don't know how it's going to be done. You might have Herb Barley coming to visit you sometime. Every time I walk into anybody's house, if I see something that could be adjusted, I say, do you mind if I fool around in your house? I have fun. You know, you got a screwdriver, I'll tighten up this door handle for you. And so they say, yes, 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 yes. You know, they're eager to have free help. And so I fix up virtually everything in their house, and I just love it. Now, I could go there and see it done, but they might not see it done. They might see it done for a moment, and then it would be back in the same form that it was before because they put that same cause in motion. Our white stem cells, our beautiful stem cells that are working for us to bring about wholeness, right action, peace, and harmony in our body, is ours right now for us to put the right cause in motion. Now, we're to the I am part here now, and look at what it says. Neurogenesis defines the formation and development of nerve cells, their origin, and their service. If you want to look up in the internet, or if you want to look up in dictionaries and so forth, it has to be new dictionaries. You can't have the old dictionary because these are new words. Neurogenesis defines the formation and development of nerve cells, their origin, and their service. Now, does anyone know what a nerve cell is? Do you have a nervous system? Yeah. And is this a system of little tubes going all over your body? What tells your finger that something is hot or cold? The nerve endings. You have so many nerves in your body, it is absolutely fantastic. Now, these are the conduits through which your white stem cells travel and operate. They are everywhere and anywhere, and they will not do anything until you tell them, unless you ignore them. And if you ignore them, then they'll associate with whomever they're with. They'll associate with colds or unhappiness, or they'll associate with bad eyes or any other problem that you might be experiencing. So our nervous system, see, now we're getting to a point where you can really put it into motion. Our nervous system is everywhere in our body. Now, if you were to go outside, well, how many of you have ever seen the monarch penguin down in Antarctica? The monarch penguin is a big old bird. He's about so high, like this here, and he and his mistress, his wife, raise children together. And she lays the egg, and he puts the egg, no, down here on his feet and then under his tummy. And he keeps that egg on his feet, under his tummy, for a couple of months while she goes to the ocean, eats and eats and eats her fill to come back and regurgitate the food to her family. It's amazing. There's a movie on it and so forth. But you see, have you ever thought, the feet of a penguin on that sub-zero cold ground on ice, and they dive in the water and they come out and they do things, you know, and they don't think anything about it. Why can they do that? Why can these nerve endings on their feet, which should tell them that that is cold, 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 why is it that it doesn't tell them that it's cold? The Tarifugo Indians in the tip of South America were living there, and the early pioneers came around the Cape down there, and when they did, they saw these Indians living there. And the Indians would go out and catch a deer or a whatever, and they would take the hide from it, but they would not use the hide for clothing. They used the hide as a sack so they could carry things, so they could carry wood to their fireplace or whatever. And while Mommy and Daddy are fishing in this, you know, Antarctic area, you know what the temperature of the water is down there? Cold, cold, cold. And little icebergs floating around. And so here Mommy and Daddy are naked going in there fishing, and the children are naked playing on the shore and in the water, you know, throwing stones and having a good time. They do not feel the cold. They do. This is written up in National Geographic and many other publications, but they do not feel the cold because they do not train themselves to feel the cold. They didn't do it overnight, but they don't train themselves to feel the cold. I was a newspaper photographer in Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin, and the Wyalusing State Park was there with a large forest and beautiful trees and so forth. And I would do news stories and photojournalism, and I worked in that for many years. And so I would go out into the forest and take pictures when they'd have these giant forest fires, you know, great conflagrations. And I would go in there, and the firemen were all busy with their masks to keep the smoke out of their face and their raincoats to keep them from getting wet and also having burning logs fall on. And I'm walking in there with my speed graphic camera, and I'm taking pictures, you know, and taking pictures here, and, you know, really some great pictures that I got, and shooting them everywhere. And I had my sport coat on and my bow tie, you know how bow ties are, and things like that. And I walked in there and took pictures and came out. And when I came out, what's that? How can you do that? Well, you know, you were in there at least 20 minutes. What's going on? And you can't do that because you can't breathe. That smoke is so thick, you can't breathe. And I said, I didn't know. I didn't think about it. Because I was in there doing a job of getting some pictures. And my pictures were that I wanted to get pictures. And I liked the smoke because the smoke helped make the pictures look more realistic. And I took lots of pictures and sent them out to all the newspapers as a stringer and did many other things. But you see, it was wonderful. It was wonderful. And they said, how do you do that? And you don't let yourself be disturbed by it. I didn't go in thinking the smoke was going to be something I needed to breathe. Do you know, I have been all of my life an underwater swimmer, and I can swim sometimes 2-3 minutes underwater, which is quite good. And I swim the Olympic pool 2 or 3 times underwater. I'm sure I don't do it anymore. I haven't done it. But for years I did that. And you get good breath control. You get good control of yourself. And so I go into some place where something is not exactly what I want, and I breathe less, if not stopping breathing. Because my body is going to function, and I'm not going to die. And I just do everything. And you see, we train our nerve endings. We train our cold sensitivity. I came back from a walk one time, and I was at Montage de Mille de Meditation in the mountains near our home now, and we had this property, and it was winter, and I was out walking naked on the path, and I came in, and my son was there. He was about 25 or 6 at the time, and he says, Dad, go in the house and look in the mirror. And I said, okay. So I went in the house and looked on her. Here I had snow on my shoulders and snow on my head, and I didn't even know it. You say, my gosh, you're dead. No, I didn't. I was meditating. I was in such deep, beautiful meditation that I sensed nothing. No cold, no anything. And This is how it works. We have that capacity to enter into 100% into the attitudes, into the philosophy of what we really believe. Are you beautiful people? Yes. Are you whole and perfect people? Yes. Are you lovely people? Yes. Are you rich people? Yes. Are you independently wealthy? Yes. Now, when you can let those words triple off your tongue as so gently and so meaninglessly as I do, then you'll find that they are not meaningless. They are real. They are really something that we all do, we all can do, and we all will do. Now, would you like that? Would you like that? Many people have come up to the ranch and tried to do the things that I did, and I had the School of the Master. It was a 3-month program in 2000, and I give it every 5 or 10 years. And the School of the Master is a very demanding school. And I had about 18 people out there, and they lived on the campus. And nobody had any telephone access in or out for 3 months, just me. There were no mail, there was no communication to any, and the people who were there did exactly what I told them to do. And they worked on the meditation paths, and they did exercises, and they did it. They were brown as bears. They were healthy. They were people who had come there and not told me about certain illnesses that they no longer had anymore, because they were living in a different consciousness. And there were times when I told them, okay, you're masters. You're masters. Now, you're going to eat at the table without utensils. No knives and forks. No spoons. And so they ate their meals without knife and fork and spoon. And one, Ingeborg, tried to use her bowl as a ladle to bring it. No, no, you got to take the soup like this and bring it to your mouth. You know, you drip a lot. But do you know that after a week of having them do that, they were so enjoying it, they didn't want to switch to something else. But they have to switch because I tell them to, you know. And then they were using the bathroom, and I told them, no toilet paper. No toilet paper. And you have to wash your bottom, but no toilet paper. And after a week of doing that, they didn't want to go back to toilet paper anymore, because they felt so refreshed. They felt all the tension was gone and all the anxiety was gone. They were just totally new people. And they all slept in one room, in the large room of the monastery. And in that room, 20 people, foot to foot, in a big circle, you know. And they didn't have any blanket. They didn't have any sheet. They just slept on a brand new, beautiful carpet I put down in there. And they just were, and of course they were dead tired by the time they went to bed, and they slept like a log. And every one of them did beautifully. And then every one of them got up for the 3-hour meditation from 3 to 6 in the morning, and just miracles happened to them momently, and wonderful things took place in their life. But they were learning how to put their stem cells on a new cruise control, on a new direction, on a new power speed for themselves. And when they left there, and another thing the silly people did, here we are up in this beautiful weather, it was July, September, October. It was, August. Yeah, we got August there. But anyway, 3 months. And it was the hot months. They chose to shave their heads. The girls and the guys. And they just chose to shave their heads. And of course, some of them had gorgeous heads. You look at their physiognomy, and it is beautiful. And some of them were kind of bumpy. But it was really something to look at. They, after they did it, they didn't think a thing about it. And they were just fantastic because they followed every direction that I gave them. Not saying, Herb, you're stupid. Herb, what are you doing this for? Why are we doing this? What's the purpose of doing this? They did not ask questions. They just did it. And when they did it, they felt so good. One of them made a beautiful pillar of here and a cross piece, you know, going onto his path. But he used two of my telephone poles. And I said, Gregor, you can't do that. You can't do that. And then another day I went out there, and they had to come down. And another day I went out there, and I found him using the tractor on the path. He said, well, I had to help, you know, Irene here, because her path was, you don't help anybody. Yeah. And then they had another real tough experience. They had to be there, not knowing how long, but they had to be there and be alone with me, just the two of us. Even though all the other people were there, each person had to be alone with me, even though everybody was there. And so I was sitting at the table and I said, I'd like a glass of water. So here comes 20 glasses of water. And they said, well, there's a glass there, I can't put it. Well, put it next to it. If the glass is there, it's not a person. You put your glass next to it. I said, use your head. Use your head. But you see, I had to do all of those things. I had to get up in the middle of the night and go and check on them and see that everything was all right, you know, that they were all doing well, and they all did well, and they were all behaving, and they all behaved. And no smoking, no alcohol of any kind, and nothing. No cell phones, no nothing. And it was a magic time for them, because they taught their stem cells some very wonderful treatments about themselves. I could go on to give you about a dozen illustrations of where they applied it in their life subsequently, and how it changed their relationships with their mother and the relationships with their wives and all the other things. But they put the total new cause. The stem cells were working on a total new picture of them, because the stem cells were looking at them as just a beautiful being. I did not tell them what sort of clothing they should wear for the school of the master, but they all chose to wear none. And it was quite an experience. And I had to check on them constantly to make sure that they weren't misusing being out in the sun, because, you know, they can forget. And I didn't want them to be unhappy. And they were happy. Okay, let's look at our next here. The field of neurogenesis has been founded to listen to the magic of how the body uses its nervous system, based not so much on fact as upon intuition and inspiration. Smile. Like me with snow on my head, you know. And one of our girls, Inga, Ilse, she was greeting some friends one day at her home in Germany, and they knocked on the door, and she had a teapot in her hand, and full of hot tea. And she opened the door, and she poured the tea all over her wrist. And so she put the teapot down, and then she hugged her friend, and her friend came in, and they talked and talked and talked, and then her friend left about an hour later. And then she remembered that she had burned her wrist, and she looked, and there was not a scar. She did not give attention to it. She did not give attention to it. So therefore, it did not claim her. I said, if you stub your toe, instantly say, I'm whole and perfect. Don't give attention to the negative. And this is how the field of neurogenesis works, how the field of these nerve sciences work. Cells in the body are found at an unbalanced level. Knowing cell references helps scientists conclude chemical method of control and give direction to the metaphysician to see the condition and its mental control. Now, because scientists are finding this information out, we feel comfortable in thinking about it. We feel comfortable in talking about stem cells. But before that, we would say, that's too intense for me, it's too deep for me, I don't want to learn about it. But then we found out that it's very beautiful. That these stem cells, taking one tiny stem cell artificially by a surgeon and inserting it into the liver through a cathode tube, you know, or not a cathode tube, but through whatever they use, and just popping it right in there, they do miracles. You know that they put stents in your cell, in your bloodstream, you know, in your blood vessels. And a stent is much bigger than a stem cell, right? Can you imagine sending a lonely little stem cell down into the into the heart to do a job? It's done. They've done it with animals, they've done it with creatures, and they've done it with men too, because scientists are medical doctors are willing to do this in other countries other than the United States. In the United States, they're still sort of keeping close tabs on whether it really works or not, and they don't want anybody to be hurt. So this is a new field which will hone down, come down from its vast body of facts to utilizing thought to manage the neurogenesis of the body and of the brain. My imagination is my vision of my reality, thus thought of as the future. My imagination is my vision of reality, thought of as the future. We think things are in the future. We think that there will be spaceships, you know. We think that there's Star Trek and stuff like that. Well, that always existed. Somebody just started drawing, you know, Jules Verne's 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, you know. Somebody just starts writing it down, and then the next thing you know, scientists are starting to fulfill it and carry it out. And Michelangelo and Leonardo da Vinci drew drawings of the diving bell before they ever had pushed air down into the diving bell. He drew helicopters before they ever had engines to run helicopters. And he drew many other things. Now, where did these ideas come from? They're out of the infinite, out of the cosmic consciousness, which you are. And you have this ability to just zoom right in there right now if you wish. Just as soon as you start realizing that you are wonderful, you are magic, you are great, you are capable of doing anything you want, anything. And the stem cells notwithstanding, the stem cells are merely your physiological game to your psychological or metaphysical reality. Your metaphysical reality exceeds any physiological game. Your metaphysical reality is your dream state, you know, as we said here, to dream and have that imagination that takes you out into the outer fields of all that is. You know, we say it here, scientists, or here, let's take this first here, I train myself to think creatively and limitlessly. And then, scientists are men of knowledge who know how to dream. Scientists are men of knowledge who know how to dream. Yet they would never tell you that. They would never say that's a fanciful thing. But I told you the story about the Big Bang, didn't I? I told that to you, didn't I? Yes, okay, I thought I did. So, they're good stories. But the scientist who told that story to his son, his kids, you know, was, you know, cuckoo. The kid said, Dad, don't tell anybody else. They'll think that you're too far out. But Alice in Wonderland was the same thing. All great things are the same thing. What about Pinocchio? With that big nose, you know. Tell a lie and your nose grows. And it's a wooden boy. I mean, what silly, outrageous, absolutely unbelievable things. And you believe it. Everyone believes it. Well, now, let's believe that we have these stem cells that we can use and do use. And let's believe also that we have something else. We are all metaphysicians. And as metaphysicians, we speak our word and it is done. Have you ever thought you'd like to heal someone of their illness? That's a lie. If you ever thought you wanted to heal them of their illness, you didn't. You wanted to physiologically touch them and help them and make something go away. If you really want to heal someone of their illness, you will heal yourself of the fact that they're ill, and then you look at them and see them not ill. Now, that's real healing. I mean, that's tough. That's not what we've been trained to do. We've been trained to look at the illusion and give it power and say that's the reality. Now, do you want to be a metaphysician? Do you want to be someone who thinks beyond the limits? Who thinks beyond what science, what man, what life has presently allowed itself to think about? Do you want to go beyond where no man has there to go from Star Trek. But yes, you want to go beyond. And that's beautiful. My genius as a child, I have forgotten. Now I live it momently. Now I live my genius every moment of my life. The genius, you know, as a child, we had all this imagination, we had all this dreaming, all this wonderful things, that, and we let it go. And our parents said, be realistic, you know. Well, this is something that you won't hear from anybody else. This is something that you just won't hear from anybody else. Little children are fully developed and magical. And as they learn how to express themselves with the tool they have of their body, which is their mouth and their language and so forth, they forget or are told to forget their magic. And then, I'm not talking about anybody present in this room, then as you get older, you have your second childhood, they think. But what your second childhood is you're returning to your dream idea, your imagination. Your anything is possible. And this is where you are today, and this is where I am today. And this is what matters to each one of us. And effortlessly, I sing to myself and dream good things. And the reason I have that there is that when you sing to yourself, it's pleasant. I like me, I like me, I like me. When you sing to yourself, you can get away with saying all sorts of strange things. I am independently wealthy. I am independently wealthy. You haven't got a penny, you know. But you say, I'm independently wealthy. You put the cause in motion and you bring it about. But singing won't make you feel that you're doing the wrong thing. Singing doesn't get on your back and say, you can't say that, you can't say that. I'm singing. Oh, what a beautiful morning. The corn is as high as an elephant's eye. You know, and all these wonderful, an elephant's eye? Who ever thought of the corn being as high as an elephant's eye? Well, the fellows who wrote the music for that song, and the words for that song. But you see, be your magical self and sing your way through life and enjoy everything that you are. And I think you are just the most fantastic group of people that I could ever want to meet or know. And I love you, I love you, I love you.